Rick.
This is March the 29th, 1961, Fairbanks, Alaska. This is a meeting of the Pioneer Igloo 4 Monument and Museum Project. Special meeting. Present were, and I'll let each one introduce themselves on here.
Gene Rogie.
Ted Loftus.
Andy Wicken.
Jack Link.
Jack Link, Secretary. Tom Jones.
Douglas Culp.
Frank Young.
Trustee of Igloo 4. We've had about 1 hour and a quarter's discussion, and now Mr. Link will read the resolution and the letter and the procedure of this meeting on the tape for the Pioneer Records.
Moved by Ted Loftus that we inform Phil Holdsworth, the commissioner in Juneau, that we are pursuing our original intent to acquire Pioneer Park and Monument Project, namely Lot 12 and the southwest quarter of Section 9, Township 1, South, Range 1 West, Fairbanks Meridian, containing 72.64 acres, known as the United States Government Reserve Land. And we will put in the description from the Federal Application Serial 61-73, recorded in Book 22, page 317, miscellaneous. Now, to go on with to continue the resolution, Mr. Loftus moves that we continue our efforts in this respect, regardless of objection from any source. The motion was seconded by Frank P. Young, and on a roll call vote, the following present members voted in favor: Harry Hughes, Frank P. Young, Ted Loftus, Eugene Rogie, Tom Jones, Douglas Culp, Andrew Wicken. After some discussion, it was decided to write a letter to Mr. Holdsworth enclosing the foregoing motion. While this letter is rough, it will be somewhat along these lines. We hope this session of the legislature will take action favorable to us, and thank Mr. Holdsworth, Governor, all the legislators for their efforts in our behalf. We understand our bill in the legislature has met with objection by City of Fairbanks. This or any other objection will not deter, we hope this or any other objection will not deter the legislators from passing legislation favorable to this worthwhile project and monument for the pioneers of Alaska. We cannot conceive of any legitimate objection to our park project, and all of the pioneers here are amazed that anyone could object to this project, which is for the benefit of all people here now and for all future generations.
Jack Link, Secretary, Igloo 4. Now, is there any corrections or changes that anybody would like to make on this? Well, this portion of this tape is to be preserved for the Pioneers Igloo 4 records. This is Harry Hughes recording.
is April the 4th, 1961. This is a transfer tape of a tape recording of a broadcast of a legislative report by KFRB Radio, and this transfer tape is made for Pioneer Igloo 4 Recorded History by Harry Hughes, Fairbanks, Alaska.
Good morning, everyone. It's time for Legislature Today again from the State Capitol in Juneau. And we have our Legislature of the Day today from Anchorage, Representative Bob Stratton. Bob, real nice to have you on the program this morning. Thank you, Jim. It's certainly a privilege to be with you. So, Bob, tell us something about yourself. This is the first time that you've been on the Legislature of the Day program with us. You're from Anchorage, of course. How long have you been there, Bob?
Well, Jim, I made my first trip to Alaska 12 years ago. This April.
Well, that's quite some time that you've been resident in Anchorage. What do you do there, Bob?
I'm in the service station business, Jim. I have a number of union oil service stations in Anchorage.
Well, Bob, I've certainly been impressed with your performance in the House of Representatives here in Juneau, and I was particularly impressed by a speech that you gave yesterday just prior to the passing of the increased income tax in the House of Representatives by the Democrats, and then, by the way, as everyone knows by now, on a straight party line vote. And I wonder, Bob, if you would tell us principally what it was that you said just prior to the consideration of the income tax increase proposal.
Well, Jim, I tried to point out that America became great and powerful because of a number of reasons. One of those reasons, and perhaps the most important one, can be described in one word. That word is incentive. It was the God-given right of men to enjoy the fruit of their own labor in free America that made America the greatest and most powerful nation on earth. If we are to remain the leading nation on earth, we must never destroy the incentive that causes men to work hard and push ahead. This same proven principle that made America great can also make Alaska the richest and greatest state in the Union. In order to fight the problems that confront us in Alaska, Jim, a man or a woman must certainly have the incentive to go forward. To make a go of it here, a man must battle the elements and many other problems. Of all these problems, one of the toughest that we face is a man-made problem, namely the income tax. This tax places a penalty on extra effort and discourages full productivity and initiative on the part of the individual. If we increase the income tax rate, we will destroy the incentives so necessary for the progress and development of Alaska. Now, 101 years ago, the idea of a graduated personal income tax was conceived by Karl Marx. Karl Marx states in the second paragraph of the Marx-Engels Communist Manifesto, and I quote, "A graduated income tax is a prime essential for the socialist state." He then goes on to say that in imposing socialism on a people, the graduated income tax should be used to tax the middle class out of existence. The present federal income tax is 34% at the middle income bracket of $8,000 annual income. This does not include our state income tax, which must be added to this figure. History has told us that when a nation has a tax burden of 10%, the tax burden has been lightly and easily paid, and there has been no grumbling or attempted evasion by the people. At 20%, there was only friendly grumbling. History also tells us, and this is important, that no nation in history has ever survived a tax burden that amounted to one-third or 33 1/3% of the gross income of that nation. Today, out of every dollar earned in the United States, 31 cents is the tax collector's share. In other words, our nation is losing 2 1/3% of destruction, if the lessons of history mean anything. Jim, instead of considering an increase in this most destructive form of taxation, I think we should be considering a decrease.
Well, Bob, I'm certainly happy that the people of Alaska have had the opportunity to hear you say principally the same thing that you said on the floor of the House of Representatives yesterday, prior to the time that the Democrats voted through an increase in the state income tax. And I'd like to point out, too, that there were two other tax measures passed in the House of Representatives yesterday, an increase in liquor and liquor tax, an increase in the gasoline tax, as well as the boost in the income tax. Representative Bruce Kendall of Anchorage gave notice of reconsideration. We'll be considering those bills today in the House of Representatives. If the indications of the past mean anything, Bob, they're going to go through again as they did yesterday. How do you feel about this whole thing, other than the statement that you made, Bob? How do you feel about the whole tax package that's been presented to the people of Alaska by the governor and the Democratic Party?
Jim, I'm very much disturbed at the way this thing was handled. It has been forced on us during the overtime part of our session. Normally, the session would be finalized and completed by now. This thing has been rushed through in the last minute and handled in the Democratic Party caucus, and they're attempting to ram it down the throats of the Republican minority and the people of Alaska, and I don't feel good about it at all.
Well, that was very well put, Bob, and I certainly want to thank you, Representative Bob Stratton from Anchorage, for being our legislator of the day today. Ladies and gentlemen, we look forward to talking to you again from the state capitol tomorrow morning with another report on the tax situation.
That was a transfer tape with permission of KFRB Radio by Harry Hughes, Igloo 4, Committee on Tape Recordings of Pioneer Alaska History for Igloo 4, Fairbanks, Alaska, and not to be used in any manner in violation of laws governing such tapes. And we will put this tape away in our historical records for future research as writers and individuals may require. This is April the 4th, 1961. This is a transfer tape taken of Frank Young. Early mining and early life of Burnett in the Fairbanks area at the Tanah Yukon Historical Society, April the 27th, 1961. And this is Harry Hughes recording. We'll start the tape recording.
This old fellow, Michael, you said that the Yukon and running and the tent you're looking for. And Bill, I said to him, what are you looking for? I'm looking for something to ride on. He couldn't find nothing, and he just tore this little top off a mush package and wrote this little verse. And he dated it. Thanks to Stuart River, March 28, 1898. That evening. Which I have. I've been offered a few dollars for it, but I'm going to keep it till I die. Here's another funny little thing he told me. He said, you know, I said to him, I said, how did this Burning Daylight originate? How did you get that name? How did he come to write this book? Well, he said, Frank, here's how he came to write it. He said, you know, I was somewhat older than London. And he said, you know, when he camped there in the tent, as soon as we got daylight, I'd get up and get out and get the fire going, get the coffee pot on. I'd drop the props back and I'd say, kid, get up, you're burning daylight laying there, get up. And Lemon, he'd struggle out and mug up some coffee and whatnot. So this harness would go along with his get up, you're burning daylight, and finally London nicknamed him Burning Daylight. He wrote the book about him, Burning Daylight. which some of you people probably have read it and some haven't. I have it home, and it's quite a book. I was going to tell you this little deal. They were camped one night and day at the mouth of Stewart River. And anyway, they were getting ready to put the coffee on. And then this morning, London was up. And he said to him, go down to the creek over there, he said, and get some water. So London went down there, and he had the axe. He had it chopped through the ice. And he started chopping, and finally he hollered up to daylight. He says, say, he said, I'm in the rock. I'm in the, there's sparks in this ice down here. He said, why, you damn fool. He said, look at your axe. You're in the rocks. You're in a dry slough. So, it was kind of funny the way he told it, but that's good near the words verbatim. But anyway, that's some of the little dealings I knew with these writers. And I know a lot of fighters. I knew Frank Gotch when he was here in Fairbanks, and then Dawson under the name of Kennedy. He was then world champion wrestler. In those days, they didn't wrestle like they wrestle today. I don't know if any of you people are familiar with the old style wrestling. Then there was Philadelphia Jack O'Brien. He was world champion. He fought quite a number of old-timers around here up in the old Century Hall, which is now the Eagle Hall. He fought Mick Berry, Billy Bates. You remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fought one of
the Connor boys. Yeah, he fought one of the Connor boys. That's right. Philadelphia Jack. And, well, there were several others in the country in them days. But if I go on telling you all these stories about these fighters and writers and what have you, I'll never get into my own terrible past. So maybe I better start and make this as brief as I can. I see my wife getting kind of bored on this deal. But well, my family, which at that time was myself, my mother and dad, came into jail in 96. We lived there 2 or 3 years, coming to Skagway in 99. Then on into Dawson. And in 1905, we come to Fairbanks here. And I went to one of the first schools here with most of these real old pioneer families, including Forrest and Charlie Kramer. And, well, there isn't too many of us left now, the old bunch, and I think you could just about count them on both hands, fingers of both hands. And the original bunch, that was maybe not that many. I went to school here in 1905, 1906, 1907, 1908. I've been in this part of the country most off and on down through the years. And took in all the stampedes. Went in to see Shannon. Downright bitter odds and up to Kaiakuk. Well, when I went up to Kaiakuk, it wasn't a stampede. I was up in that country. And been all over the country. And as the years rolled on, why, I didn't do too good, but here I am, and I've raised a large family, and I'm quite contented to stay the rest of my days right here in Fairbanks. Thank you very much. The songwriting I did.
Well, it's too much of a story for the stars to tell and all, but bought the Barnett deal.
Yeah.
I just wanted to continue with that, you know. Too much to talk about right now, but you know, he owns practically all of Clary.
Barnett?
On Manly Bottom. Yeah. And I was on Dome Creek the morning of the shooting. Mm-hmm. On the shot right.
Well, Denny, I don't see why you don't tell that.
It's quite a story.
I didn't intend to tell this Barnett story. I don't know how I got roped into it, but I did the best I could with it. How about you telling that story? You might as well get the real lowdown on this guy.
Bob Shelton and me were telling that because he was on Dome Creek the morning of the shooting. No, he was not there the morning of the shooting. Bob Shelton, the drover.
Well, why don't you and Bob Shelton tell
this
Barnett story has got to be continued, you see. And if we do that,
we didn't leave here until 1909.
Most
people here remember Barnett.
Oh, yeah.
He had all that rich ground on Dome Creek.
Yeah.
And I happened to be on Johnny Radley's ground at the morning of the shooting. He said, oh, what I entered to a two-step room, two blocks.
Mm-hmm.
He owned all that ground on Dome Creek, you know.
Yeah, well, Danny, thank you very much. I was too young to kind of get it all.
Anyway, you see, Van Madeline, he took that option on all those claims on ferry, claimed down to 6. Ed Perry shipped those claims. The creek was named after by Perry.
Yeah. Yeah. But didn't Barnett get a big bunch of money out of that?
Why, hell, yes.
Yeah.
Well, you see, if he was, he had to pay this money. Yeah, Frank Manley had to pay this money in gold coins. So they had money here in carbon at that time, and the option was due. But he wanted the gold coin. He wouldn't take paper, he wouldn't take anything else. He wanted the free Manley. So therefore, Manley got a vote. He wants to know. Got a vote from one place to another, he knows that the fastest target is fed. Until he got to know. And he got down there, he got all the money. And a suitcase, all $20 gold. And he landed right here in the Salt Bank about 2 days before the auction was due. He walked up to Barnett's bank, you know, and he threw all the money down and just found it out. What must have been close to $100,000 on gold, $20.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, Danny. Thank you.
Yeah.
Huh? Well, it's good to go. Get back to my song. I was living in a little cabin down on 2nd Avenue with an old timer by the name of Roy Lunn. I guess a lot of you old timers knew Roy. And Roy and I used to play together in an orchestra and whatever. And I started out writing some songs. The original writing of the Squaws Along the Yukon, I wrote it in 1914. I was living with Roy Lunn in a little cabin when that was written, of which I have the original music and words. I also wrote the Iceworm song, and that got up and down the Yukon, up to Boston, and all over the country. I have the original writing of that. And I wrote many. I wrote Down Along the Kobuk. Now, don't get me wrong, there's was on the waters of the Kobuk and whipped him to the sea. That was written by a fellow by the name of Black. My song is Down Along the Kobuk. I guess maybe some of you people might have heard me sing that some years ago when I was knocking around playing guitar and whatever. And I wrote quite a number of others that I still got. And I made a big mistake that I didn't follow through on it. Go into details on some of it. It takes too long. Nevertheless, those songs I told you that I wrote, I've got the original writings of them. People that knew me in those days and would like to see the copies, which I have dated and everything, put away in my keepsake. Now I have here a document written by Frank Doodle. Now Frank Doodle was the last living member of the Yukon Order Pioneers that was organized in Circle City in 1894. Now that was a long time ago. And here he gives you the story of all the gold discoveries that a lot of people never heard or then never knew anything about it. And I won't go into details to give you all this because it would take too long. But I'm going to tell you one thing right here. That gold was discovered in the Panama River in 1888 by Frank Desmond, Don Brook, and George Carey. Now this George Carey, his daughter still lives in Fairbanks. Her name is Eva Collins. Now this was many years before people ever knew where the Panama was. I haven't got time to go into details on all this. This discovery was made down here in the Sinan Bar, just about opposite where the university is, out in there, 1888. People don't know that. I've got it in black and white here, signed by the last living member of the Yukon Order Pioneers. He was the last of that bunch. Now, any of these gold discoveries, anybody wants to know anything about when it was found, who found it? When it was discovered and who made the discovery, I have it right here. For instance, I just need to hear. Gold was discovered on the 40 mile in 1886. See, that's a way back. That's a way back before the Klondike stampede. Yeah. Millicuik, which is in the Northwest Territory, discovered in 1892. Circle City District, Alaska, was discovered in 1892. See, that is, 69 years ago. The Circle District, from where the Miller House is in them places. That's way, way back, you see. I'm just going to read you here one. Gold discovered in the Tantishman, Dykeman, Peter Crook, and I was going to give you this one about gold discovered in the Kyokuk in 1889 by an old man who was later killed by the Indians when he went prospecting. Year following his death, a posse of miners went into the district and hanged the Indians guilty of the death. See, that's all history, you know, that people don't know anything about, you know. These Indians resented these white men going in there in them years. But I don't want to pick up too much of your time, but I'm sure I've got a bunch of history that I'd like to see the Historical Society and Pioneers of Alaska put it together and keep it very prepared and based upon it. Well, it's essential. Yeah, it's the benefit of this historical society and pioneering. Well, I thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy some of my material.
This is Joe Canton, and this is what day is today, April 27th, 1961, and I'm going to get the names of all the people at the meeting tonight. Well, we thought just to have their voices recorded. We just heard Frank Young give several good stories. We just want to get the names of all the people in attendance to give their name on the recording for you.
And that was David.
Did he speak everything?
May I add something about I know Frank Young was schoolmate in Dawson, and Fairbanks wished to add on that Frank Clary was a Spanish-American War veteran. And I knew Elam Harnish, he was a logger here and sold logs to the Independent Mill and attended his funeral, and Frank Butel's too.
Now, did that
be your Ed B. Davis?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Thanks a lot, Eddie. Yeah.
Say your name, Julie.
Dolly Young.
That's Mrs. Young.
Victoria Fossey.
A visitor from, is it White Horse now?
Adriana Quayle.
Audrey Loftus. Hertha Baker.
Fabian Carey. Jim Cassidy. Ted Loftus.
Good night.
All calendar day.
Stay up.
That was Denny Quayle.
How do you do?
Give me your name.
Fred Hadley West.
Lou Rowinski.
Charles Kine.
Clyde Burke, more or less of a place Christian pioneer. Andy Eakin.
There you go.
Francis Baker. Florence Manville.
Treasurer.
And Forbes Baker.
President. Got everybody here.
That was a recording of a transfer tape taken at the Tanah Yukon Historical Society. And this is a report I will read onto the tape. The Tanah Yukon Historical Society Thursday night elected Mrs. Audrey Loftus president for the year of 1961-62. Other new officers are Professor William Cashin, vice president, Mrs. Frances Baker, secretary, Mrs. Florence Mansville, treasurer, Mrs. Hertha Baker, corresponding secretary, Harry Hughes, press and publicity chairman, Ludwig Rowinski, trustee, and Andrew Wicken, trustee, were the two new trustees elected. The other trustees are Ivor Scarland, Frank P. Young, Harry L. Hughes, Charles Kime, and Forbes Baker, seven members of the Board of Trustees. The society also has named an editorial board for the proposed historical magazine, and the members are of this committee are Charles Kime, chairman, Forbes Baker, Mrs. V.G. Francis Baker, William R. Cashin, Mrs. Dennis Adrian Coyle, Frederick Hillig West, Mrs. James A. Annabeth Hanlon, Harry L. Hughes, Mrs. T.A. Audrey Loftus, Mrs. Florence Manville, Earl R. Pilgrim, Victor Richardson, Ludwig Rowinski, Dr. Ivor Scarlin, and Andrew Wicken and Frank P. Young, and Bobby Sheldon. That is the members of the new editorial committee for this composing of this historical magazine. And that is the end of this report on this tape. This was Harry Hughes, member of Igloo 4, Pioneers of Alaska, the Yukon Order of Pioneers of Dawson, and a member of the Historical Society, recording this tape for history and research. May 2nd, 1961, this is a special meeting of the Pioneer Monument Park Committee of Pioneers of Alaska Igloo 4. We met at 404 Second Avenue to make a request to the state for immediate access to the Pioneer Park so that we can place some of this heavy equipment that needs to be moved. The letter is addressed to Phil Holdsworth, Commissioner of State Department of Natural Resources, Juneau, Alaska. Dear Mr. Holdsworth, we, the Igloo 4 Pioneers of Alaska Park and Recreation Committee, wish to apply for a permit for immediate access to deposit two heavy items on the State Pioneers Memorial Park. The two items of which we have reference are the Harding car, the steam locomotive, which must be moved as soon as possible. The military and the Alaska Railroad have agreed to assist us in moving these items to the park project, but would require our authorization and an access permit from your office as soon as possible. Our plan is to place these items in a compound on the project for their protection. Because of the urgency of this matter, we would like to have an authorization from you as soon as possible to proceed and notify the Alaska Railroad, the military, and the Bureau of Land Management. Signed, Harry L. Hughes, Chairman of the Park and Recreation Committee of Pioneers, Alaska. One copy is addressed to Governor Egan, Roscoe Bell, Bureau of Land Management, Alaska Railroad, Igloo 4, and the Grand Igloo of Pioneers of Alaska. Present at the meeting were Ted Loftus, Tom Jones, Sig Bold, Paul Griman, Harry Hughes, and Cole McDonald and Eugene Rogge didn't show up, and Ivor Scarlin wasn't able to show up, and Frank Young had to work. So we went ahead and drafted this letter and got it on its way to try to proceed to get something done about this project. This is the sum and substance of this report, Harry Hughes, Chairman of the Committee.